around the house, have to jump on. I don't want to just end up doing it, I don't know why. They say you have to do something mad every day, don't they? Frighten yourself every day.
I think that they eat, sleep and drink horses.
It's a good boy, isn't it?
They're born for it.
There's a braveness there, or a fearlessness. They just love it.
Energetic, lively, spirited, very, very determined. Everything you look for in a good pony or in a great horse, they had all of those qualities.
Lescargo and Red Rum together as they come to the second last. And they touch down together.
Yeah, you know, they have the pedigree to be champions.
We're at Arthur Moore's stables. It's a snowy morning in February. Horses are coming in from the fields. The warm breath from their nostrils visible in the cold air. Arthur is the son of Dan Moore, both legendary trainers. It was at their stables that Tommy Carberry arrived on a September morning in 1956 at the age of 14, beginning one of Ireland's most well-known and loved racing dynasties. A dynasty that went on to win 8 Grand Nationals in Ireland, England and France. Several Gold Cups and Cheltenham victories.
We were just farmers. My father died when I was young, and he wasn't too old either. So my mother, God rest her, she had to rear the 6 of us. I was at CBS in Drogheda, and I obviously wasn't sending home big marks at the end of my exams. So I was let off to go to Dan Moore's to serve my time or to work at horses, you know. I was there over 25, 26 years, maybe more longer now, and I didn't count it anyway. Quarter of a century as the head man there used to say. Yeah.
And was it the best decision you ever made?
For me, yes. You know, definitely. There's 4 Gold Cups and Irish, 2 Irish Nationals and an English National as well, so.
In the middle of all of these wins, Pamela Moore, Arthur's sister, arrived home from boarding school in England and fell in love with Tommy.
We got married in 70.
Where did you propose to her?
I don't know the hell.
Tommy doesn't like to talk about romance, but he does like to talk about horses.
Yeah, you like a horse with a bit of personality, you know. And you'd often come across a fella that is, he's a cheeky bugger, you know. And I like him because you could play with the beggar, because he'd give a buck and a kick, but he'd be doing the same as you were doing. Giving him a slap, he'd just give a buck. You know, he only acting the fool.
And Lescargo's going to avenge last year's defeat, and Tommy Carberry's going to become the first jockey in history to win the Gold Cup and the Irish National and the English National. As Lescargo strides clear, 12 years old, to win the National for Raymond Guest. And here he comes to the line, Lescargo, the comfortable winner of the 1975 National, the little hero who won it last year.
When Tommy Carberry and Lescargo won the National in Liverpool, only 3 of their 6 children had been born. But over the years, the tape of his victory was played over and over, so often that it eventually unravelled.
I used to pretend I was in the National, and later on, each jumper was coming, I'd be calling them different names, like the chair or the beach or the, here comes the big ditch, let's get over this one safely.
And you'd know all the different horses, Handy Pandy, Boom Docker, going out in front, and all these horses, and Crisp, and obviously Red Rum, Lescargo, and so you got into this, and you knew what was going to happen the next fence, and then you'd forget about it, and 2 years later Nina would throw it on, and she'd be really interested in it.
It was good to watch them. At least we had them anyway to see them, and it's great to see Dad riding as well.
I suppose there was a few small saddles lying about, and then someone got a bright idea of attaching it to the couch.
Well, Peter used to get up on the sofa anyway, and he'd be riding a finish, and he'd be the faller, and he'd fall off, and he'd get back up again, and he'd ride the next one, and he'd fall off that one, so we all had good fun watching it.
Peter beating the whip off the couch.
I remember the masses acting the fool, trying to break the couch.
Well, he's always giving out because it was his side of the couch, and he'd be always swaying because it'd be loose because I'd be on it the whole time.
You can sit in there, Dad. What race do you want to go for next, Dad?
Tommy and Pamela Carberry's six children grew up in a dormer bungalow in the parish of Rettoth.
I suppose another handicap hurdle.
Inside, there's a long, narrow hallway.
We'd have to get them checked out first.
In the sitting room, old black and white pictures of Tommy's racing days hang to the left of a marble fireplace.
Will you give him a jump there next week?
Elsewhere, there are pictures of Thomas, Paul, Mark, Philip, Nina and Peter John when they were younger.
I think it's present now that we talk about that.
All skinny legs, bony arms and bright t-shirts. Always on horses, always with big smiles.
Just from Punchtown he was at.
I don't know, it's a little rusty.
Outside there's a small tree in the garden, a horse box out the back and green fields.
Tight cottage one in the go-hub.
It was across these fields and beyond that Paul, Philip, Nina and Peter John all learned how to ride.
First pony I had was Jack. He was a stray that came into the yard. Well, he just landed beside the yard. He was like a tinker's pony. He'd throw you off fairly quickly. He'd run along and then just stop, put his head down and he'd go flying over his head.
When I got a bit older, Paul brought me off a load of places. We got in a bit of trouble sometimes, but we shouldn't really been in the land that we were in. So we kind of got a few phone calls that I kind of had to get. I took the phone calls a few times. The farmers kind of giving out we were going into their land, but it kind of blew over then after a while.
We'd have to dodge the farmers a good bit and be thrown out. We'd have to deny it. Say the hunt was true. It wasn't us. Be riding out every day. I come back from school. The minute I got home, straight onto the pony and head into anybody's land I could find. Just keep jumping ditches and come back when it's dark. Come back when I'm hungry. On my own. With my dog. One man and his dog.
I remember Dad used to collect me from school sometimes when I was very young again. I probably just can barely remember it, but we used to stop for a cup of tea maybe on the way home and he'd have the cup of tea and then he'd come out. So what do we when you want to grow up? Like, you know, so I used to say I want to be a fireman or whatever, but just slagging him a bit. But deep down it was always, you would love to be a jockey. The desire was to be a jockey. And for me, I suppose it was wouldn't it be great to be a jockey just to be one and have it as your career. And every day with the horses and riding, going from race course to race course and living that sort of lifestyle, and that's what's in your blood.
All six of the Carberrys went to Rettoth National School. Two of their former teachers, Maurice Carney and Claire Donlan.
Well, there would be this remarkable vision of, was it a pony, was it a Carberry, because they appear to be unified and you never know when they'd be crossing a hedge or crossing the road or crossing a ditch. But in those years, people going that way were just aware, you know, that today you watch for potholes. Like in those days, you watch for a Carberry leaping a ditch.
The Carberrys never walked anywhere. They were always going at full speed. So harem, scarem kids, but so loved. Just fantastic, fantastic kids at school.
When Peter John was in one of our more junior classes, and his teacher was getting a bit concerned that he appeared to have rather strange-looking biscuits for lunch. And eventually she inquired, well, what kind of biscuits are those, Peter John? And he said, well, they're the ones I feed my rabbits. I have some rabbits. And she wondered, well, why are you eating them? Well, I was told if I want to be a jockey, I'd have to eat like a rabbit.
And I've loads of stories on Nina. Nina made it into her school government. She was her minister for sport. She was full of the joys, full of enthusiasm, a leader, so confident, so capable, and just needed to believe in herself.
You know, that Nina was always a tremendous achiever, but she had a modesty there that I mightn't, you know, and so she drove herself to achieve it. Whereas the boys had that stronger edge, I suppose. They had supreme self-confidence in their physical abilities. Paul now comes to mind. I can even picture him on our fine field out here, when we had a fine field out here, and he tearing into it and you know, outrunning all round him as fast as a hare.
After leaving school, five of the six Carberrys became involved in racing. Mark is the exception. He works as a carpenter in Australia. Thomas, the oldest, works as a private trainer. The other four are all jockeys. Paul is ranked among the top professional jockeys in Ireland. In 2005, Nina became the first woman in 18 years to beat professionals at Cheltenham, and she's one of four female riders to have completed the Aintree Grand National. Philip has two French Gold Cup victories, an Irish Grand National, and has won the Champions Hurdle. The youngest, Peter John, turned professional last year. Brian O'Connor is racing correspondent with the Irish Times.
I think the Carberrys are a pretty unique racing family in Ireland and in terms of Irish sport as well. I mean, it's remarkable having three siblings like that with the level of talent that they have. Ask anybody in racing, they'll tell you Paul Carberry is probably the greatest natural talent that they've seen on a horse. Nina is in many ways a replica of him in terms of style. They both ride quite short, both toe in the iron, both rely on their balance an awful lot, and it's a fantastic natural balance, and it's wonderful to watch when it's in full flow. Philip rides a little differently, but is also a hugely naturally talented jockey, as his list of big race victories proves.
The biggest stage for every jockey is the Aintree Grand National. And in 1999, 24 years after he'd won the same race on Lescargot, Tommy Carberry, now a trainer, had a horse in his yard that he thought could win it. A horse called Bobby Joe.
You could call him just slightly on the temperamental. He'd be a little bit of a worrier now about, you know, and if he didn't get off on the right foot, he could just say, well, I don't like it, that's it, you know.
In 1998, Bobby Joe won the Irish Grand National, so the stage was set for him to take on Aintree, and Paul was chosen to ride him.
I'd like to get there early and just go into the sauna for 20 minutes, so that's just a bit of a sweat. I wouldn't eat that much now before the races, so it's fine on race days, I wouldn't eat till the evening time.
Would you not be starving?
No. Actually, when I was riding in the flat, you wouldn't eat for nearly a week. Have a sandwich for the week. And then on the Saturday, you'd have a meal. Small dishes, rabbit food. But I wouldn't really have much of a routine now. This is the Mozart before it is.
Seriously?
No. If it is a big race and you have a big chance, I suppose you could compare it to having maybe three or four espressos, one after the other. But you can still feel relaxed, but yet you're going to have that energy pumping. It'd be good to have a crack now in the weigh room, all the lads cheering each other.
Barry Geraghty, a close friend of Paul and his partner Rachel, and a previous Aintree winner.
It's the biggest race, you know, of anyone's career. And no matter where you travel in the world, if someone asks you what do you do when you say you're a jockey, the first thing they'll ask you is, have you ridden in the Grand National, or have you won the Grand National? So it has worldwide recognition, you know, it's the biggest thing you can do in racing.
You look through the form and you know you're focused. You have to be focused and know what you're doing. Know what horse you have to beat.
I hardly ever look at a race before I get up and just get up on the horse and find out down the start what sort of fancied and what's going where or who's doing what. But generally wouldn't really look at the form now at all. Get up on the horse and ride in the race. See, a lot of the other boys be studying the form and that, but it doesn't make the horses go any quicker, I don't think. So you're getting yourself fucking nervous or whatever, so just don't think about it, just wait for see what happens.
There away they go, and away to a very good start.
When you're in the race, it could be very cold and you're wearing these skimpy clothes and people are in the stand are freezing. They say, how did they do it, you know? But once you're out there, you're concentrating so hard on the race that that all goes out the window, the cold and the sleet and the snow or whatever it is. When you jump on the horse and you're going down to the start, all that comes back to you, the sense of, you know, the smell of the horse, the sweat and the rhythm and that. It all comes back to you that, oh, I'm at home as such.
First fence, they are spread right across the fence and Northern Lad.
Well, the start of it now, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I think there's 7 jumps in it until you get to Beechers. So you can see all of them when you hopefully get to the 7th anyway. But it's amazing now, they're very wide anyway. But so you'd see the first two fairly well, but you can see even when you're coming to the first, the size of the third, that's very big. So that you can see that straight away. But you just ride it when, as you find it. Hopefully meet it on the right stride and get over them.
I wouldn't have seen him until I arrived on the track at an early age of maybe 14 or 15 or 16. But you knew straight away from the time, you'd have heard that Tommy's young lad can ride well, or he's another young lad coming along, or Nina rides better than the two lads. And when you see them ride then, you just, they slotted right in.
Ted Walsh, racing commentator, trainer and former jockey, has known the Carberrys for years. He rode against Tommy in the 1970s.
He was always a very, very classy sort of jockey. He was a flat jockey turned jump jockey. and he had that style about him, and he was an instant success, and he was just from a very early age he was a top class jockey, and he only got better as he got older. The bigger the occasion, the better he rode. Paul is sort of flamboyant, a bit like Tommy. He's carefree. Again, the bigger the stage, the better Paul rides. He rides very, very good all the way through the year, but when the pressure's on, again, it never phases Paul. Lovely hands. Horses jump great from... They always jump well for Tommy too, but they even jump better, I think, for Paul. Paul is a very, very natural rider, and horses really jump for him and run very sweetly for him. He doesn't have to... He doesn't ever appear to have to be over-aggressive to get the best out of a horse. And the same applied to Nina. Nina was a girl into a man's world, but you knew she was a bit special from the first day you saw her ride. She was very stylish. She's definitely the best of her generation, no doubt. No doubt the best of her generation. No doubt about that.
Then came behind them. Baronet was a faller. We've lost Baronet of the faller at the fourth.
Whole way around, they've had a great run down the inside the whole way.
The brave man's route, they call it. You know, down the inside, there's, the drops are bigger. You know, and you need a really sure-footed horse, and you know, obviously a lad who's not going to fall off either. But Paul went the brave man's route, and usually does.
Jumping brilliantly, and I was going past Norma Williamson, and he said to slow down. He says it's a long way from home from here, so I sort of took his advice and just stayed in behind.
Right behind them is Bobby Joe's in a good place with UDP, and they're all safely over that one. Plenty of standing here as they come to the chair fence. And
the chair is a formidable fence down in front of the stands. They generally drop themselves a gear when they see it coming up. You know, but she looks big, and you say, I'm not going to take a chance of that one now. You know, there's a couple of fences like that around the track, being standing up like a wall in front of you and your woman. So you'd have to get yourself ready. Some of them have been thinking about, would we whip around and go back to the way?
Still Blue Charm for Scotland leading. Right behind them, it feels like gold.
In terms of racing, it's always one of the great questions. You know, how do these guys do it, you know, day in, day out, ride over fences at 35 miles an hour, knowing that they're going to get hurt? I mean, we're talking people who are, you know, crazy brave, but that's just a fundamental. Then you've got the question of, you know, how do they get so good at it, you know, the real top guys? And that means, you know, no idiot ever got to the top of any sport. You know, there's always an intelligence there amongst guys who are absolutely at the top of their game, because they wouldn't make it to that level unless they were bright. They are different from the rest of us in that, you know, most of us would have a certain capacity to imagine what would happen in the worst case scenario. If a jump jockey was like that, he just wouldn't get up on the horse, because, you know, he'd be paralysed. He'd be completely paralysed with fear. I mean, you just wouldn't do it. So there's definitely some kink there that allows them to do what they do. There's no fear. If there is, it's hidden very well.
These two over one and two, followed by third, Brave Highlander.
I think Tony McCoy says it all the time. He says anytime a jockey gets injured badly, like the first thing he asks the doctor, so when am I going to be back riding? You know, because that's exactly what a jockey thinks.
Only by a half a length to Blue Charm.
I've been lucky enough. I just broke my collarbone once when I was starting off. Later on, then I fell in Nace one day, and I was fine, but a horse fell over me, and I had a dislocated fracture on my ankle. Three screws and a plate alongside it now, anyways. But so it's restricted the movement a bit. But apart from that, now I've been pretty lucky, very lucky. Yeah.
Brave Highlander out very wide, and Sam Lee. Then comes Fraser Island, Kendall.
Yes, I'll be here a while. Broke my arm, two wrists, ribs, bone in my back, leg three times, I think.
Broke all the ribs down the other side and punctured lung. It collapsed, so that put me on a machine for a week. What do you call the things? Life machine. Yeah, put you on oxygen or whatever as well, you know.
I haven't had too many, thank God, touch wood. I had a broken collarbone on my metatarsal there. Paul has a lot more injuries now than I. He's probably broken every bone in his body.
Yeah, punctured lung, punctured spleen. I think that's just it. Fingers, thumbs. That enough.
Yeah, but I think like you can't really have fear in you when you're heading out. Like, I think everyone has to be clear in your mind and know what you're doing. And I think if fear kind of enters into it, it's not good. Like,
I think if you're not enjoying it, something like fear might come into it. Fear is a decision. It's like if you lose your dedication and focus, your fear is going to creep in. But if you have your dedication, your focus, and your desire to win, you're not going to give that a chance, you know. But and when you do see jockeys around you being injured, killed, severely injured, permanently injured, it's something that happens. But you have to respect that it happens in a lot of other things as well.
Paul, like Nina, is attached to Noel Mead Stables outside Navan in County Meath.
The first time I saw Thomas and Paul was out hunting, and the two of them arrived out on two grey ponies, and they were two walking demons at the time when they came out first. I suppose they weren't any more than 7 or 8 or 9 at the time. I'll never forget them. But nothing was too big or too wide or too deep. They had to try everything, and when we were standing around checked, they'd be jumping over from one ditch to another, one field to another, just for the passing the time. So there was always action with them. There's not one ounce of badness in them. Now they're all tricksters, every one of them, and like, I mean, there'll always be cracking jokes and whatever, but there's not an ounce of badness. Like, I don't think you could find a nicer family. That, you know, no way would they do you a bad turn if they couldn't do you a good one.
Paul's statement always was that we were here for a good time, not a long time. And he's right, I'm sure he is. Well, I'm sure that plenty of the stories about Paul have grown legs over the years, but I mean, you can't be on a race course for any length of time without hearing something about the man. I mean, stories about riding horses into pubs and...
He was down hunting down the south, and the hunt came into this town. He got a loan of a hunter of a trailer, and they were all in for coffees and drinks and everything in this place, and he rode the horse in. So all the people were running for cover and everything. I said, it's a wonder it didn't go through the floor. Oh no, walked it in, walked it up and down. So like, he could do something like that in the middle of, for a laugh.
Do you like hearing those stories though?
Yeah, it wasn't like to see him coming in on a horse and you enjoying a cup of tea.
Would you have done things like that?
No, I was very quiet. He takes after his mother.
I had a broken arm actually in the cast at the time, and we were all in the pub and somebody said that there's a horse down there and a horse box would attack on him. So I suggested to the boys that we take him out and bring him in. And they all just laughed. And then somebody said, they dare me to do it. I said, you don't have to dare me, I'm going to do it anyway. So we pulled them out and into the pub, we rode them. And we did we know there was a lad in the corner, said, hey, that looks like my horse. And you know, it was his horse, so he went a bit mad, but got the horse out of the pub and he wasn't too mad. He settled down, saw the funny side of it.
Why do you do things at that
point? I don't know, just something clicks in my brain that I have to do it, so. It just happens. Rachel said I have a split personality, but I don't believe that.
Why'd she do that?
Oh, she said I'd just be very quiet when I'm not drinking, and when I'm drinking, I'm a very funny guy, but I would be very shy anyway, so.
I read something on an Australian newspaper from a few years ago where they were talking about this mad Irishman whose party trick was to climb out the window of a speeding car, climb over the bonnet of the car, or the roof of the car, and climb in the window at the other side. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but it made it to Australia, which sort of tells something about the impact of the man.
No, I don't know where that came from. No. Get out one window, be in the back window, all right, but it wouldn't go across the top.
The lunchtime headlines on Wednesday, the 24th of May. The jockey Paul Carberry has been given a 2-month jail sentence after being found guilty of an offence while a passenger on an airliner.
The general consensus would be that there's no badness in the guy at all. It's just, you know, he gets bored easy. But sometimes it veers into sort of dangerous territory, and the incident on the plane going into Dublin Airport was, you know, beyond the pale. You know, I'm sure a lot of people have felt like burning the Irish Times over the years. To do it at 10,000 feet is a bit much. And there was genuine fear, I believe, from fellow passengers when the flames started going up. But in fairness to Paul, I think nobody realised quicker than him, you know, that he'd gone beyond the bounds. And I think it was a wake-up call in terms of his behaviour. You know, but I think it's a tribute to the guy also, to, you know, to his essential personality, that it was forgotten relatively quickly, and that nobody believed that, you know, there was any malice in it. It was just, you know, a question of a guy who's easily bored being bored.
It's just messing. Just your case, he didn't just forgot where I was. They kind of playing it. They've done it heaps of times before, so he wasn't thinking. No danger intended or anything like that, so everything was dealt with fairly quickly. But it just took a while for it to blow over. But lucky enough to get it off it anyway, so everything worked out grand.
Last year, Paul Carberry was in the headlines again when he failed a breathalyzer test before a race meeting in Nace. It was a second offence.
Walking into the race now, I thought I'd be fine, so obviously wasn't, but it's one of those things. But definitely think the spleen has a lot to do with it. Not God doesn't get out of the system as quick, but can't change that now either. So I'm trying to stay off until I finish riding.
Is that tough?
No, it's not too bad. Find it easy enough.
And why have you made that decision?
Sort of Noel said they couldn't let me ride it unless they went off it. So I said, no bother, I'm giving it a try.
Laddie rushed through the top from Blue Charm, feels like gold, well up there too. Bobby Joe there for Ireland, then General Wolf is being given a couple of cracks with a stick there. Sunny Bay runs next, then Addington Boy.
I'd say now the percentage of times that I'm just looking at green must be a hell of a lot, because sometimes we're going along in a race and just think all I can see is green, because you're only looking at the grass. It's already dum 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 dum. Oh, jump green. So I would be quite enough to. Sometimes you get the odd shouting, looking for a room or that, or wondering how you're getting on. Like in the National, you get a few lads talking to you, see how you're going, or some races, you'd ask a lad, are you going well, or find out if he's had enough of the sleeve before you attack him. Sometimes I've been singing on the track, or it, or during the race. Can't remember what. Oh, I was actually singing to Barry once, in Tralee. Barry Geraghty, he was on a hot shot. I think it was, I'm not sure if it was money on, he was favoured anyway, and he turned into the straight, and I was pushing my horse and he was sitting on the bridle, so I started singing, I need a miracle, I need a miracle, and the miracle came true because I bet him a half a length or something. So singing to Barry, it was a sight to note.
When you ask around about the Carberrys, a smile comes on everyone's face. Various words are used to describe them. Brilliant horse people, great characters, modest, quiet, yet wild. They're known for their big smiles, great laughs and cheeky grins. But what do they say about each other?
Dad would be, as I said, quiet. He'd be, when you ask him something, he'll tell you all about it, but he's not going to get into a big conversation, you know, so... you know, wouldn't be a lot said, so you do listen. And what, you know, what it is, it's important. And Mum is very, very helpful to us all. She'd have the same enthusiasm as Dad would in the horses. They work hand in hand perfectly. They work very hard. And she would be the one, if one of us got a fall, she would be the one to give the big roar, hope, you know, as in a fright. Paul is more of a he's very smart. Like he'd be very good with his one-liners and different things like that. But he'd be very quiet as well. He'd be pretty similar to Dad.
We're all sort of close. Yeah, myself and Nina would be very close. Like,
would you chat on the phone much?
I'd be about the worst person in the world to talk to on the phone. It's just yeah, no, okay. So not too many people ring me up for a chat. I'd be closest to Nina, I suppose. She's a bit like my clone. She's when I was a baby, I had a sheet sort of a thing that I used to rub under my nose, and I probably had it till I was 4 or 5 before Mum got it off me. She couldn't even get a chance to wash it. If I didn't have that, now the ties were out of pram fully. And then when Nina came along, she had the exact same sheet, and just find her style and everything is pretty much like mine. And she doesn't like being slagged too much. She's a very good dancer. chicken legs go everywhere.
Philip's very outgoing, and I think we're all pretty outgoing, really, and maybe I'm a little bit shy sometimes, but I don't think any of the others are shy. I don't think... They seem they're all similar, like when they all get out, they're all basically the same, mad.
Philip wouldn't tell himself what he's doing. Maybe he's very smooth. You wouldn't know where to be at.
I suppose I wouldn't say something until I was sure. You know, you wouldn't like to tempt fate, that's all. You know, nothing sort of mischievous about it or anything like that. I'd be very open and honest, but I suppose if this, when you're getting to the racing, you have to keep something to yourself, I suppose, you know.
Very laid back as well. It'd be a bit of a mad side and it comes out not too often. But it tends to get out every now and again. Smoothie, ladies man.
I wish. no comments about that either.
As they jump the water jump, feels like gold, second, and then Northern Lad in third.
One thing is big in the races, especially on a mucky day, the whole muck is coming back on your face and you're getting, you know, there could be a stone in the soil and it's hit you on the face or something like that. Apart from that, you're out in the fields, basically, and the cold air is rushing through you and it's going by your ears, and maybe if it's a big race you hear the crowd cheer, roar, and up the coming up to the finish, all you can hear is sort of that level of the crowd roaring, a high constant roar. You do get to hear that, but still you're so focused on the job at hand that it doesn't totally come into you.
Travelling exceptionally well in second, and just in behind these third runs feels like gold. They're chased by nine.
Everyone watching the run actually is tense, like, you know, it's over every jump, and you're counting every jump. And
I just think it's watching. Was there something there that's going to knock him down? Somebody run out in front of him.
Dad is really calm. He wouldn't really get very emotional or anything, but the same one was kind of over that one or whatever.
It could be only once in a lifetime. And you feel lucky to have the privilege of looking at it.
This is the second last fence, and there's about five or six horses could win, but Blue Charm has the inside berth and he's going to jump in first. No, he's not. Brave Highlander, many people down there, many people, the faller at that one, and that leads.
Made a run for it after turning into the straight and jumped the second last, and Merry People fell in front of me, so I just missed him, and then I got a good run down to the last and jumped that well, and away he went.
It's when you're over last is when kind of the race comes on.
Bobby Joe for Ireland comes sweeping through to take the lead in the Grand National. They're coming to the elbow.
And he kept picking up and picking up. And I got to the elbow, I thought, this has to be a dream, can't be real.
It's single file to the line, and it's going to be Bobby Joe for Ireland, and it's going to be the Carberry family. He won the Irish National. He's now going to win the Martell Grand National. And there they go, past.
This race, when I was growing up, I always wanted to win. I'd been watching a lot when I was younger. You don't just get a mad rush, you just sort of trying to think to yourself, did this actually happen? And then you realise it did, and it's just sort of, that's a great feeling. Brilliant.
We all just couldn't believe it and ran towards a horse, and it was we got to the horse a bit quicker than we thought, because the finishing line is very close to where we were, and where we're at, the horse, there was still the horses galloping by us, so we were in the thick of it when we were the first to welcome them back. Anyway,
Paul rode with loads of confidence and sit up there and enjoy yourself, you know, and he jumped like a buck the whole way around. You know,
if you've won that race, no one has anything on you, because you've shown that as a family, you like to Paul and Dad, they've done it, they've ridden it, and Dad has ridden it and trained it, so just goes to show you can, if you can do that, you can do anything. So you just keep that in your head. It's a good confidence booster and keeps you going.
It's amazing that we hadn't won the National for 24 years, and I was the last one that had won it on the Scarrow. And then for Bobby Joe and Paul to win it, and Ted and Ruby to win it the following year. I think there's six of them since. But for those 24 years, there wasn't one Irish winner. You'd have to be proud to, that something went right for a change.
when you think of it that way, it was a huge accomplishment for that, you know, and one that has to be matched. I don't think it'll be very hard to match, you know. No, when you think of it that way, it's a fairy tale story, really.
Oh, it was a great day. Like, it was like a dream the whole day. Just everything the whole day just felt like a dream, and it felt so easy. Like,
the feeling of having a winner is pretty indescribable, because like just maybe 20 other horses and riders in the race, you have 20 other trainers, 20 other jockeys, 20 other owners trying to win that race, and yet you win it. So you notice at least 40, 60 maybe people behind you that have tried to win that race, and yet you've won it. And you might have outsmarted them, or you might have been lucky, but you feel so good after that you want that feeling again when you win. It's a real clear feeling. I suppose when you breathe in, it's the freshest air you can breathe in, and you have no negative feelings, you have no regrets, you know, because everything you've done up to that point was the right thing to do. So you just feel really clear and reset, I suppose you can say, and all your sins are washed away, kind of thing, I suppose. A little bit like that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.